Good morning. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Bryce Dix. Recently, Albuquerque City Council voted down an ordinance that would have established a basic online landlord registry meant to track data on rental units across the city. That's left advocates worried about the influence landlords have on the housing market. On this morning's Let's Talk New Mexico, we'll explore the complex relationship between landlords and tenants, plus ongoing efforts to regulate the industry in both city and state government. We'll kick off the hour by meeting a professor with UNM School of Law's Economic Justice Clinic to give us an idea of where the state's housing market currently stands, followed by a landlord to give an industry perspective. We'll also meet an advocate for the People's Housing Project who is currently pushing back on gentrification, and we'll talk to a lawmaker about why housing legislation often fails. Finally, we'll round off the hour by taking a step back to look at housing patterns on a national level and how they compare to New Mexico. Are you frustrated with New Mexico's rental housing market? What's your experience with finding affordable housing in the state? Are you a renter or even a landlord with ideas to help with the shortage of rentals? Send questions or comments to letstalk@kunm.org or call in and we'll take your questions live on the air this morning. The number to call is 505-277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Alrighty, so I want to start off by introducing Serge Martinez. He teaches in the UNM School of Law's Economic Justice Clinic, which focuses on support for grassroots economic development initiatives, enforcing the rights of low-wage workers, and improving housing stability and conditions for low-income tenants. Thanks for being in studio with me today.
Morning.
It's super awesome to have you here. Now, Serge, can you paint a broad picture of where the state's housing market is currently right now?
Sure. I mean, in the briefest terms possible, it's really rough out there. There are fewer units than we need for people to rent, and folks who are looking for a place to live, renters, right, are finding that the cost of rental is sky high. It's gone up significantly. I think just recently I saw a study that over the last 5 or 6 years, it's gone up some 70%.
Mm, yeah, since 2017.
Right. And, you know, anecdotally, I talk to folks all the time who are finding it really hard to find a place that they can afford, or if they have a place, are getting the rents increased seemingly, you know, at will by their landlords, sometimes on very brief notice, and finding that they're not able to afford the, you know, the cost of the rent that they're being charged. Mm-hmm. We look, you know, It's not just Albuquerque. It is a statewide thing, but it is more pronounced in Albuquerque and Santa Fe and Las Cruces. It's a question of not enough housing units. We're, you know, by some estimates, down some 30,000 units here in Albuquerque that we need to stably house the folks who are here. And the upward pressure on the rents is really just hurting people and you know, causing them to have a lot of trouble to afford to have a stable place to live.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the shortage of units. That's just a broad estimate of how many units we need here in Albuquerque, for example.
Right.
And you've constantly said and consistently said that tenants' rights protections haven't been passed in the state legislature since, you know, the early 1990s, around 1994, you've told me before. In your opinion, why is housing reform struggling at both the state and the city level?
Sure. Yeah. So it has been since the early 90s that we revisited or made any real changes to landlord-tenant law in New Mexico. And we've struggled to make progress. I think, you know, in large part, there's a mismatch, a misunderstanding of how much who are the folks who are affected by this, right? When the legislature convenes at the state level, at the local level, they hear a lot of very loud voices from the industry side of things, from landlords, from the folks who are, from realtors, from, you know, from builders. But it is really challenging in New Mexico to get tenants organized to sort of hear the voice of that huge community, right? At some 30% of the folks in Albuquerque are renters. Mm. That's tens, hundreds of thousands of folks. But instead, what we hear the concentrated voices of a small number of folks who represent the landlord side. And then, you know, people do show up, people talk, but it's not concerted, it's not organized, it's not in a way that resonates. And I think what it creates is a real misunderstanding at all levels of who is being affected by this and how large the group of folks who are being affected by the by these issues is on either end of the spectrum, and it leaves tens, hundreds of thousands of folks without a real opportunity to share their stories, to explain what issues are important and why. And, you know, when we have a legislative setup that we have here where they meet for 30, 60 days, you know.
They're a citizen legislature, too,
exactly.
The only one in the country,
Precisely.
By the way.
Yeah, I mean, and that is a topic for another day as well.
That's a whole other show.
But what it means is, the folks who this is their job, who are professionally able to get up there and talk to our legislatures, they can do that, right? If you say to a low-income tenant, someone who's struggling to pay their rent, that here, you need to take a whole day off work and drive up to Santa Fe, and maybe your bill will be heard, or maybe it won't, or maybe they'll push it for another day. You know, that's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm.
And this is a very complex topic. Wages are barely growing here in the state, and reports actually have come out labeling Albuquerque specifically as one of the hottest small markets in the nation, or in the West, rather. How do we combat the increasing cost of living as we're talking about this if lawmakers just aren't tackling the issue? Where do we go if we can't go to our state legislature or our city councils?
Well, I mean, I think I am somewhat dispirited by the setup of our state legislature, but our city council, they meet pretty regularly. They're relatively accessible, right? Who they listen to is a whole other question. But, people have the ability to constantly put pressure and talk to the folks that they are, that are local. That's a slightly easier lift, but because of the way the laws are set up in New Mexico and some of the funding, it's a little bit harder to get stuff done. But, you know, the mayor, the governor, the folks who don't just meet every now and then will listen. But I think there's also lots of space for folks to start advocating for themselves, for tenants to organize, to talk to each other, to find common issues that they're having and say, hey, we're going to make some noise about this and take their own actions in terms of working together to try to make change, but also educate the public on what's happening on the state of play right now, and also thinking about how things might change and how we might address this issue, and understanding and expanding this idea of what housing even is, right? From this idea of a private thing that you just, it's to keep you out of the sun or rain, depending on where you live in the country, but rather a social good, something that it benefits all of us to have everybody stably housed, and to really continue this conversation that started during the pandemic when we started to see the value to everybody of having folks stably housed. It's a message that has not been, I think, well propagated or well understood from folks. And I think the issue, many people, their only contact with this is they drive down the street and they see folks who are sleeping in tents or whatnot. Yeah. They don't really grasp the size of the issue, but also think about how this is, again, we benefit as a society when everybody is stably housed, but this is a message that is not, I think, hasn't been amplified enough by people like me and the folks who are on this side of the issue.
Well, that brings up the question, do you think housing is a human right?
Oh, 100% I do.
And right? And why?
I think it's just a basic human need, right? You can't opt out of the housing market for the most part. You need to have a place to live. And, I believe that if we have the means to provide housing for everybody, we have an obligation to do so, right? And we do. This is the richest country the world has ever known, and we have the ability to do so. The fact that we have folks who are unhoused or not stably housed is a choice that we've made. We say we want this. This benefits many of us, so we're going to keep it this way, because to do otherwise would impose some costs on us.
What about the private market? How can we incentivize things like affordable rent and rental housing or zoning changes that allow for more units in places like Albuquerque, Santa Fe, Taos is struggling a lot? How do we incentivize it?
Right. There's a few different parts to that, but incentivizing more development is, I think a good thing by reducing some of the zoning barriers that there might be to more density, to, overemphasizing the voices of the folks who happen to be living in a place and controlling what it will look like going forward, right? It's not dissimilar from what we discussed earlier, right? If we have a zoning meeting locally, a planning committee meeting, the people who show up are the ones who have a long-term vested interest in maintaining the status quo so they can prop up their property values.
And the people who sit on those committees and zoning boards, right, too? They always
exactly.
have a vested interest.
Absolutely, right? And so I think understanding that the way that that distorts the conversation is really important. And, you know, I've heard a lot of talk recently here and elsewhere about relaxing zoning restrictions and easing the reducing barriers to construction and allowing for more density. I think that's a great start. That's really important, right? But that doesn't happen overnight. You know, we could Houston ourselves tomorrow where there's no zoning, but we wouldn't all of a sudden have heaps and heaps of new housing. There's a lead time to that. So in the meantime, I think there needs to be a look at how do we help people stay where they are, keep people in place. And that comes through, you know, we had the Emergency Rental Assistance Program for quite some time during the pandemic that allowed folks who were struggling to stay in place.
We are seeing pushback not only from state lawmakers, but we are also talking about city council. Recently, Albuquerque City Councilor Tammy Feeblecorn wanted a basic online landlord registry that she told me aimed to give a better idea of the actual numbers of housing that we need to have here in Albuquerque. If you're interested in that, listeners can go online to KUNM.org to read more. But Serge, I want to know what you think about that ordinance failing so miserably. It failed on a 2-7 vote in city council.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, this seemed like the lightest of all possible lifts. say, you know, we have this industry that is that dominates a basic human need, and Councilor Feeblecorn's bill would have said, let's figure out how much there is, how much, you know, what's going on, what the rental market actually looks like. And that was, I was really surprised at the pushback and the way that the city council agreed with that pushback. It shows me that, again, the voices of landlords and property owners are really being amplified in a way that I think is it's disproportionate and it's inconsistent with what we see out there. Like the number of folks who are affected by these things, you know, the renters vastly outnumber the folks who are coming in saying that we can't possibly do this. And yet the voices that are being heard and listened to are the ones of the very small number of folks who are in this business. Right. And, you know, there is this sense, I think sometimes that, oh no, if we don't do this, we won't have enough housing. Well, first of all, I'm not confident that threat is actually real. But second, you know, a response to that for me is, okay, let's create our own, right? Social housing that is publicly financed, publicly owned, publicly managed, is a real thing and a real success in lots of places around the world and has been in this country until it became, you know, a four-letter word back in the 40s, 50s, and is something that I think we sort of act like there's no possible way that we can do anything other than have this basic human good, this basic human right need be commodified and be this private thing. Well, we've seen the private market has failed at providing adequate housing.
Yeah.
And so another approach is needed. And instead, what we're seeing again is the folks in charge saying, we better listen to every single thing that these folks are saying, because otherwise then they're going to take their ball and go home, which, again, is a threat that I'm not convinced is actually real.
Okay. Well, in a moment, I'm going to ask Chuck Sheldon. He's the owner of TNC Management to chime in on our conversation this morning. But first, we have to go to a break. By the way, our phone lines are now open. Call 505-277-5866 to share your experiences with the wild housing market. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Bryce Dix, and we'll be right back.
For over 60 years, UNM Health has trained generations of healthcare professionals, a patient care legacy that continues today. UNM Health, proud to serve New Mexico and proud to support KUNM.
KUNM's mission is to create a more informed public, one that is challenged and invigorated by a deeper understanding and appreciation of events, ideas, and cultures. This critical work is all made possible by contributing members. Thank you for your support.
Black churches in both Birmingham, Alabama, and Charleston, South Carolina have been attacked by racist violence. Composer Sean O'Pebolo has written a musical reflection on these tragedies. It's a piece called Two Black Churches. I'm Fred Child. Join me for the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Bryce Dix, and our focus today is rental housing and the attempts our city councils and state government have made to regulate the housing market. Have any thoughts? Maybe you've had a hard time getting housing, or you've decided to buy property of your own to avoid paying the high price of rent we've been having. Give us a call, 505-277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. And I have an email here from a listener that I just wanted to read and get some reactions from Serge here. It's from Erica G. in Albuquerque. She first came here in 2013 and rented a room in the northwest of Albuquerque for $233 per month, which also included her utilities. She left and ended back up in New Mexico in 2021 and found herself renting a room north of Taos in Arroyo Hondo for $300 per month plus utilities. They had a month-to-month lease, and within a few months, the landlord wanted to increase the three-bedroom rent from $900 to $1,500. They negotiated him down to $1,200. He also stated that he would like to live in the house again because his father, who lived next door, was recently diagnosed with cancer. They let it be and decided to move on with that situation. After 2 months of staying with a friend, they were faced with rooms for rent at double what they've seen the year before. That was like $600 per month or more, they were saying. They reached out to their church for some kind of rental situation so they could study with a level of stability because they were in school. They were offered a casita for the whopping price tag of $1,800 per month, which was her whole month's salary working full-time above minimum wage. And Serge, I just wanted to get your reaction to that, of this steady increase of rising rent, not only here in Albuquerque, but we're talking about in Taos. Just recently, coming from 2013 to 2021, we're seeing $233 a month to $1,500 per month. What's your reaction to that?
Regrettably, not that surprised, right? We have the market is obviously one that is, more being driven by more folks coming to New Mexico for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. But we also have a legislative and sort of rental market landscape that really plays into this, because if you have a month-to-month lease, as most people in New Mexico will end up having, mm-hmm. That can be, the rent can be raised on just 1 month's notice, and there's
Why is that, though? Why do people mostly have a month-to-month lease here in New Mexico? Is there a reason for that, do you think?
It speaks to, again, the power of the property owners, landlords, market. They do that because they can. It gives them maximum flexibility and maximum ability to do just what we're talking about, right? You can raise the rent at will, basically. Mm-hmm. We don't have a mechanism that provides for any rent stability, rent stabilization that addresses the amount or frequency that you can raise rent. Yeah. And, I've talked before about this concept of good cause eviction, that you can't evict somebody you can't terminate a lease just because, without a good reason, right?
Well, I do want to get another voice in our conversation. Chuck Sheldon is the owner of TNC Management here in Albuquerque. They have around 2,000 or so units of housing across the city. He joins us via Zoom. Thanks for being with us, Chuck.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me today.
We appreciate you coming on. So you've been listening to Serge chat with me. I want to get your reaction to some of the things he said. One of those was the lack of meaningful housing regulation. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that we look at across the United States and say, I grew up in Los Angeles. I grew up in tenement houses in the 50s, where they washed them out with hoses before the next family would move in. That became a failed system. The city lost control of the tenement houses. Gangs moved in. Mm-hmm. So now you have rent control in Los Angeles, San Francisco, Portland, Seattle. And I've lived in those cities. And you have less housing than you had before. You have more people on the streets than you ever had. So those policies aren't working. I think we need to find the long-term solutions to look at how we increase housing, how we increase density, and work towards those solutions together, mm-hmm. and find how we can do that.
So let me follow up on that then. Do you have solutions on tap right now that you think would work best for cities exactly like Albuquerque? We're seeing a ton of housing being bought up in Taos, in Santa Fe. People can't live there. They're being forced out into Rio Rancho, into Albuquerque, and have to make that commute. Do you have any ideas on how we tackle this issue?
Well, you know, you had for 10 years, you had some housing control in Santa Fe that limited the housing, and there were no new units built for 10 years. So there's a shortage of supply. Mm-hmm. So when we put constraints on construction and we tie that down, construction does go away. And so then we have the residual of that we're living with now trying to catch up. That's why the pushback is so ardent on what we're trying to do here in Albuquerque. You're talking about a bill that was put together for housing. You know, I calculated that'd be another FTE for me to service that bill, just to be able to put the information together and update it and keep it to what point. And, you know, right now we have our information out there on the web. We have over 200 vacant units that are at the FMR or in HUD rates that are 942.
Can I jump? So what's an FTE? What does that cost?
That's a full-time equivalent employee. Costs us around $40,000 a year.
So you're saying it would take more money on your end to live up to these regulations if they were to go into law?
That's correct. They're not free. You know, you have to be able to get there and have somebody collecting that data, somebody monitoring it, somebody putting it in. The city did not include in their calculus how they're going to evaluate all that data coming in and then say, you know, how you put that out there for dissemination. So, you know, I'm looking at that and saying, I'm going to be burdened to be able to put more information out there. And I'm not sure the purpose and the scope of what it's going to do. So those are the kinds of reasons you fight those things. You know, we don't need to have more labor put into something that's not going to return a benefit to the public or to ourselves.
Okay, so as I take it, we've been talking about this Albuquerque landlord database. I think you've lobbied against that regulation. Why? If we're talking about things like regulation that takes up money for your employees to work on, would it take a lot of time for your employees to put some simple data into a database like the square footage?
It's going to require another hiring of another person. You know, when you're small companies, you just don't have people. You can't afford to be like a city government. You have more employees than sometimes you have work. You know, when you're a small company, and I come from that point, and not being facetious, I worked 32 years in the federal government. I was deputy director for Arizona and New Mexico. Uh-huh. I had 300 employees working for me. So I have a little knowledge about how federal and state governments work. So when I'm looking at this and I'm saying in a small company, every person counts, every person has a function. Mm-hmm. So if we increase functions, we have to increase people. And that's a burden then that comes right off the bottom line. Then you end up increasing rents to cover that person's salary.
So let's say, for example, if this landlord registry did pass in Albuquerque, I want to, and this is speculative, how long would it take a new employee of yours to input those 2,000 plus units into the database, do you think?
Well, I did a quick calculus on that, you know, and it's going to, you know, at 14 items per unit.
Okay. And I want to remind listeners, these are basic things like square footage, how much your rental unit costs currently, how many bedrooms, things like that. Now go on. Sorry, Chuck.
So now you have to pull all that information out and input it into a system and then say that's going to take around 15 minutes per unit to do. That's the first tranche. Now you have to update it. So every time you have a vacancy, you have to update it. Every time you have a change in rent, you have to update it. So now you're sitting with a person that's updating that information consistently. That's difficult to do. But I didn't want to get into the debate about this. What I would like to do is say, you know, let's, you know, I think Serge brought several points up. And I think that, you know, we're looking at we're short workforce housing. No question about it. We all agree on that. Mm-hmm. I think, the focus needs to be, how do we work together to create more housing? What are the things blocking us from doing that? That's the energy we need to spend. You know, I've looked at that and said, you know, we're short. We have 200 vacancies. So we have people that we're looking to try to fill apartments. Mm-hmm. And part of the thing that when we talk about homeless, we're talking about homeless situations that saying some of these folks don't want to have housing. We claim they do. We had to have police cars come and move people because they were breaking into apartments and threatening current tenants, and tenants were moving. So we were creating a larger backlog of vacancies because we had people that were being intimidated. There was an article regarding a property on Chama and Zuni where vagrants took over and pushed a woman with her child out of her apartment and took over. So those are real stories. Those are happening. And so we need to have mental health. We need to have drug addiction help to get people that are stabilized. Mm-hmm. Other people that need workforce housing, and you have single moms that are not making enough money, we need to be able to help them. Mm-hmm. We need to look at how we can find daycare that's reasonable for these people to go to work and be able to support that.
Yeah.
So we need to find solutions. And putting more regulation on does not find solutions. And that's why I'm adamant about that.
Okay. Chuck, thank you so much for your input there. I did want to talk to someone else who's been at the forefront of legislation on the housing front at the state capitol. Representative Andre Romero, thank you for joining us on this conversation on Zoom.
Thank you, Bryce. Great to talk about what I think is perhaps the most important issue in New Mexico, underlying everything else we need to work on.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for chatting. I do want to dive into some housing legislation that has failed in past sessions, especially earlier this year. There's a ton that didn't pass during the 2023 session. We have a list online at KUNM.org for listeners to follow along with us. But can you quickly tell us what you and other legislators were trying to accomplish last session by chance?
Absolutely. Yeah. So for the past several years, we've been looking to extend the time with which a person could cure their eviction. So right now we have the shortest timelines in the country where if you get an eviction notice, you're evicted within 3 days. And so we were hoping to widen that net, that length of time that someone could come back and say, look, I got another shift. I was able to make my rent. And we wanted to extend that to 11 days. Mm-hmm. And so that was number one. We also just wanted to clean up a few pieces of language saying like your landlord should give you a receipt in the case that you paid cash for your rental. Things that just made it really clear that the landlord-tenant relationship was not necessarily just one-sided, mm-hmm. But really clear that folks had who their rights were and what the process was to give them additional time, mostly to make up for any missed rental payments or be able to negotiate that outside of getting an eviction notice, which causes a ton of problems when you have that mark on your record. It makes it really difficult for folks to get new housing.
I want to follow with Chuck. I don't know if you were listening to Andrea say there some of the initiatives they were trying to push during the 2023 session. For example, simply providing a receipt for cash for your rental. They had other bills for ending the rental control moratorium. How would that affect your business if some of these bills went into effect?
Well, I think that, you know, one, the moratorium was horrific. We had people not pay rent. Then we had took a year and a half for the state to finally be able to help with that. You know, we lost and had to borrow against our properties $500,000 to pay our bills. We had a PPP of $465,000 to pay salaries. When you don't have rents coming in, there's no funds to pay for maintenance and there's no funds to pay for employees.
What about a bill doing rent control? For example, how would that affect your business, do you think?
Well, for example, in December, in January, we have a little 14-plex that the rents are $1,000 a month. Our gas bill for that 14-unit was $12,000 for January. And it was $8,000 for December.
So are you paying
the price of grass? You can't, you know, that's just a killer.
So are your tenants paying these utilities are you paying for them?
We're paying them.
Okay.
And so that exceeded the income of the property. And so if we cap it, we just say, here's a fixed cap on rents. And, you know, you don't have an ability to share those costs, then you're out of business. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that's not taken into account, if you put a cap on rents, how do you cap cost? Because that's what puts you out of business. And so we need to be able to look at that and say, you know, for example, we're talking about how much rent has gone up.
Mm-hmm. I want to go.
Let me finish.
I think
this is an important point. Rent, when you looked at HUD, did not increase rents from 19, 20, and 21. When they came out with their new HUD rates, they were $300 above what the prior rate was in 18. The new HUD rate from last year to this year goes up $110 on a two-bedroom unit. So the federal government is pushing these rates. So now we were pushed to take vouchers. We received the vouchers. The new voucher rate goes up to the new rental rate. It'd be foolish not to rent at the new voucher rate and receive that money. So that naturally pushes the rents. Mm-hmm. And that's at 60% of AMI. That's not full rent. So we're able to live in New Mexico and make things work on 60% of AMI. Yeah. And that needs to be considered when you look at that. So we're not, it's not a gouging. What you're trying to do is make things work. People are getting wage increases. And as those increases go up, you have to pay new wages. Materials, for example, have more than doubled. When you go get a furnace, that furnace was in 2019, that was around $400. So you could go to Home Depot and see one for $400, $450. Today it's $1,200. Mm-hmm. We have new regulations that say you have to be at 95% efficiency. That's driven the cost. So now those costs have to be made.
I have an email from someone named Peter. They say, it's one thing to raise my rent, but an alarming reduction of my basic maintenance is wrong. I still have Serge in the studio with me right now. Serge, are you seeing a lot of reduction of basic maintenance across cities like Albuquerque when rents are going up? Are we seeing that right now?
It's hard for me to compare, let's say, reduction one way or another, but I am regularly hearing from folks, right? That's one of the chief complaints, that when I talk to tenants, they have two primary concerns. One, the rapid increase in rent, and two, the conditions of their apartments. And, you know, conditions in on the lower end of the rental market have always been questionable, and you know, you've always been able to find examples of places that are not well maintained and that are, you know, operating on a shoestring. And I hear this constantly, that there's not a connection between, you know, the increased rents and better maintenance or better conditions in folks' apartments.
Yeah. This morning, we're talking about housing, and we still want to hear your thoughts or questions. Our phone lines are still open. You can call us at 505-277-5866 to join in on the conversation. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Bryce Dix, and we'll be back in just a moment.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, mother and son, madre e hijo, award-winning chefs Zarela Martinez and Aaron Sanchez reflect on their careers and their relationship.
Mom, you never pressured us to go into this business. You just said you're going to find what you want in life, and then I'll be there to support you.
That's next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
Donations come in many forms: a sustaining membership, a one-time gift, even that extra vehicle you no longer need. Donating a vehicle is a great way to support KUNM. It's easy, pickup is free, you get a tax deduction, a KUNM membership, and your vehicle could be worth hundreds of dollars in support. Give us a call today to learn more about donating your vehicle. Call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on KUNM. I'm Bryce Dix. We're talking about the complex issues surrounding the hot housing market we're seeing in New Mexico, and we want to hear your thoughts. Any ideas on how to balance the interests of the private market and affordable housing? Do you think our state and local governments are doing their best to solve the problem? Let us know. Call 277-KUNM. That's 505-277-5866. And I was just talking with Representative Andrea Romero, and I wanted to read this email from a state employee and get your reaction from this. They say, as a state employee working out of Santa Fe, we are expected to be back in offices full time. During the pandemic, however, the high cost of rentals in Santa Fe has gotten even more prohibitive, and I personally was forced to move to Albuquerque due to increasing rents. What can the state of New Mexico do for its employees in Santa Fe that can't or don't want to make those long commutes so that we can live and build community there? It would go a long way in employee retention and reducing burnout being able to live in the same place you work. And Andrea, you live in Santa Fe, I believe. What's your reaction to that? Do you have any possible solutions?
Sure. I think, you know, when we look at statewide options, of course, we have to take into account communities that are not Santa Fe, which is Santa Fe is off the charts when it comes to affordability. Mm-hmm. We just simply have always struggled with being able to create affordable homes for folks. And again, we're 10 years behind on building, the homes that are needed. So we have a lot of commuters. In fact, the city of Santa Fe has seen about 50% of, state workers, other workers commute into Santa Fe for those jobs. And so this has been a systemic issue for years. The issue going back to some of the what we can do to put in place as a foundation, the state can look at, options when it comes to actually investing in affordable housing. We've been putting millions for the very first time investing in the building of these enterprises and actually supplementing those that can't afford to actually build. So we've been doing that. We're looking at how it is that we can make it easier for folks to make the day-to-day and look at some of the subsidy programs through the Mortgage Finance Authority that help folks with first-time home buying. Our rental subsidies have gone away. So we're looking at how it is that we can supplant, these folks as a force for good statewide. But Santa Fe is very unique as a state when it comes to the very complex issues of affordability that we have here.
So we're talking about people getting forced out of their places that they call home, essentially gentrification. How should laws tackle the issue of gentrification in places like Taos, Santa Fe, Albuquerque? And where do we find fairness in that dynamic for property owners?
I think when we look at, what other areas have done, we try not to compare since New Mexico is so unique. but really the movements of yes in my backyard. You know, when we talk about the importance of having housing in our communities, it's not just a home, right? It's everything else. It's where your childcare is. It's where your job is. It's where you're able to pay your taxes. It means so much to a locality to do that. And if we're thinking about the future of our growth, of our state and our sustainability, we have to think about, you know, all of those different aspects. And today we're not just talking about low-income folks. We're not talking about low-income housing. We're not talking even, I mean, even if you have a great job, right? You work for the state, you still can't afford to work here. So we need to think more broadly about what middle income, working incomes look like when we look at affordability. And so we haven't set up, you know, subsidy programs for folks that are even able to afford a home, but simply because of the geography of it today, that may be, you know, cost prohibitive. So we need to think more broadly about the problems that we're trying to solve, and certainly the nuances with, you know, victims of success like Santa Fe, which is a great place to live, with wanting to be able to counterbalance the issues and looking at the area median income thresholds for those subsidies and expand that for folks that are working, that are trying to make ends meet and can actually live here. But yes, in my backyard, yes, we need all housing, whether it be single family homes, but certainly creating dense communities, but being able to talk to neighbors and really be at the forefront of how we address these issues needs to be part of the conversation, and inviting neighbors to the table to say, how can we get you on board? This is so necessary and we need to move forward.
Yeah. Well, we have two more guests on the panel for today, but I did want to go to a caller, John from Sandia Park. Hello. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico.
Hi. I had a couple different things. I think one of the biggest issues for me ends up being a lot of a circular argument. You raise prices, you raise costs, and you have to go back to that cycle repetitively. One of my main concerns is, like, and I recognize this is privatized because it's corporate profit, et cetera, but controlling, like, the profit margin piece for local versus large investment companies is part of the problem. I mean, nationally, we have the big issue of large corporations buying up a significant amount of the property, and then those companies then continuously drive that profit margin up to keep their stock going. And that's hurting our local folks, even the local investment folks. So, I mean, going to the no regulation space really causes problems, and it doesn't protect our local folks, both and renters as well as local owners. Yeah. I mean, if we were able to cap some way profit margins, I mean, with, again, protection for local folks, because you don't have the economy of scale that the large investment companies have.
Absolutely. You know? Absolutely. Well, John, I actually can get a reaction to what you're asking for one of our other guests. Joining us in studio is Anna Lee Desaunier. She's an organizer with the People's Housing Project, an advocacy organization rallying against gentrification in Albuquerque, among other housing issues. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So we just heard from John from Sandia Park, and he's essentially asking, should there be a profit margin cap with a separation between small businesses and large corporations? What do you think?
I mean, I think fundamentally I agree with Serge that housing should be a human right, and that it really shouldn't be a for-profit industry at all. But I will say that, yes, he is correct in that, you know, these large companies are often drivers of really bad conditions. And I think because they are responsible to their stakeholders as opposed to the people they're actually providing the housing to.
Yeah. So as we talk about gentrification this hour, how is it actively changing our makeup of our historical neighborhoods, especially in Albuquerque? I know you're very familiar with the area.
Yes. You know, it's really tragic to see, being, you know, a born and raised Burkenia. I love this city, and it's really disheartening to see so many local, you know, local working people, generational locals be displaced. I've heard from quite a few people reach out to us and say that, you know, they're heartbroken because they can't afford to live in their hometown anymore.
Yeah. I have another caller on the line, Marisa from Santa Fe. Hopefully I didn't butcher your name. Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. What's your question or comment for today?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, great. Yeah, I'm a Santa Fe native, and I'm in my mid-50s. I've owned 4 homes in the Santa Fe County area. I sold my very big house when my son went to college in 2015, had no fear I could get back into the market. With a lot of loss, a lot of family loss, I had grief and decided to just hold off on making that sort of decision. And when I got back into the market in 2017, I was competing with cash buyers sight unseen coming to Santa Fe in 2017. And that's when I noticed a big shift. Houses were going off the market within 3 days mm-hmm. to cash buyers. I have been pushed out of Santa Fe, and luckily I'm, you know, blessed. I have family and I'm living in a house that my dad has in Española. I don't want to be in Española. My home is Santa Fe. Airbnb has created a situation, I think, all over the world, not just Santa Fe, not just New Mexico. And now we've got folks that are coming in and buying houses. There's a lot of empty houses the majority of the months, or they're being Airbnb'd.
Yeah.
And that's another big issue. I think that we could be imposing taxes on people that buy homes for them to rent year-round through Airbnb, so they can contribute to the public schools, to the roads. We're having major issues in Santa Fe right now.
Well, can I interrupt you? I have Anna Leah's here in studio with us. She can definitely tackle this issue. We're seeing people, essentially what she's talking about is people coming in from out of state into New Mexico. They're affluent. They're more wealthy. The critique is our city in Albuquerque, for example, the governor maybe is trying to attract more affluent, wealthy people here into the state. What do you think about that? Do you think that we need to put our priority somewhere else?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should definitely take care of the people who are here, and we should be developing in their best interest. You know, so often we get accused of being anti-development, and that's completely not true. We're for development for the people who are here right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when it comes to, you know, Airbnbs, and we at People's Housing Project would like to ban Airbnbs outright right now. You know, people are struggling. They need housing. They need actually affordable housing. There's so much to get into. But, you know, another big point I wanted to point out about gentrification is that, you know, it disproportionately affects low-income communities of color.
Yeah.
And I think that the way that we're continuing to do the same as we've always done is contributing to, you know, the racial inequality that this country has a history of.
Mm-hmm.
And we really need to look at gentrification if we're serious about, protecting low-income people, people of color, preserving our cultural history. Then we need to take on gentrification in a more serious way.
Well, and it's not happening just here in Albuquerque. It's happening nationally. And I do want to introduce our last guest. We have a couple minutes in the hour, so I'm sorry to get to you so late, but we are introducing Eleanor Noble. They are a research analyst with the Urban Institute's Metropolitan Housing and Communities Policy Center. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So let's quickly jump into it. What kinds of patterns are you seeing in the data with the national rental housing market?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to hop in and talk a little bit about the large-scale institutional investor issue that has been mm-hmm. brought up. We're seeing that a lot in Sunbelt cities. It's definitely drastically increasing, but of course, that varies by the housing markets in different metros. So of course, places with more single family rentals are seeing a lot, a greater share of those bought up by institutional investors. And it's still kind of to be determined exactly what the outcomes on the housing market will be for that. But overall, we're also seeing these players generally evict at higher rates, raise rents at higher rates. So it really is important to have a diversity of housing options in metros to kind of combat that.
Eleanor, I think this would be a great person to have you react to. Sarah from Albuquerque, thanks for joining the show. Can you just give us your question or comment for the show real quickly? We're running low on time, but I think Eleanor can answer your question.
I'm seeing all this happening in Albuquerque. I have a friend who's been trying to buy a house for 2 years, first-time home buyer. Every time, every bid, outbid by investors, cash and above. Also seeing people applying for apartments who are getting outrageous application fees, like $200 to apply for an apartment.
Yeah.
And then they have to come up with like first month's rent and deposit. But they don't even get the apartment, and these landlords are just sitting on it collecting application fees. Cities like Atlanta have tried to stop these investors by doing things like saying you can't have more than two homes for rent and you have to live in the city. Why isn't Albuquerque and Santa Fe doing these things to stop this investment problem of people coming in with a lot of money and driving out the locals?
Thank you so much, Sarah. Eleanor, I want to ask you, are you seeing this across the nation? Where Sarah was talking about $200 fees just to apply for an apartment. What are you seeing?
Yeah, I mean, the additional fees and fines, especially by this type of larger owner, is definitely something that we're looking at. It has raised the housing cost burden for a lot of tenants, just to ridiculous rates. But I do want to highlight the fact that there is kind of this really exciting influx of policies that are getting enacted across the country to try and combat or, you know, stem this investment. That includes caps on property holdings by investment trusts, restrictions on bundled sales of foreclosed homes, transaction fees, out-of-region transaction fees. And all of this. So there's like
there's a ton
that's coming up. It's all really exciting. And basically the goal of some of those would be to fund programs that would expand opportunities for residents of color and low income residents to own property in their own communities. So policies like Tenant Opportunity to Purchase Act, all of these things can kind of be funded. But just to highlight, if you are going to try and support these alternative ownership programs or even programs to support smaller scale landlords, you do need to have the data to kind of understand the landscape of ownership in your community. So that's generally, you need that data.
Yeah. Well, and we focus a lot of this conversation about housing specifically itself, but there's also this issue of zoning boards and committees and who sits in those positions of power. That could be a whole separate show. But as a final thought, what would have to change in the system itself to ensure more equitable housing when there are so many layers involved to it?
I mean, there's not one single thing that I can point to, of course. I think that there are a lot of different approaches. I think some of the most important things to kind of look for, especially in just the coming short term, would be thinking about increasing supply in historically exclusionary, generally white areas. So making sure that when we are densifying, we're thinking about how to do that in a sustainable way in historically exclusionary communities. Also coupling some of that densification with tenant protections to combat gentrification, making sure that folks are able to stay in the neighborhoods that they grew up and lived in. And then also pairing that with just, we need so much more money for subsidized low income, affordable housing. We need to support alternative models of community ownership too. So there's a lot of different ways to approach this, and there's not one single easy solution.
Well, thank you so much. I hear the theme music coming on. That is all the time we have today. Thanks to everyone who called in and to each of our guests, Serge Martinez, Chuck Sheldon, Andrea Romero, Annalie Desaunier, and Eleanor Noble. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it online or subscribe to the podcast. We'll have the audio posted on this episode's page at KUNM.org shortly, along with a list of resources that were mentioned throughout the hour. We're also on Facebook at KUNM Radio if you've got any lingering questions or thoughts. Join us next week to discuss the recent developments on abortion access in New Mexico. Thank you, as always, to our team, our engineers, Marino Spencer, Megan Kamrick screened your calls. Kaveh Movahet was the executive producer of today's show. I'm Bryce Dix. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.